On Wednesday, the 23rd of September, 1584, Mr. John Spencer, the Sheriff of London, was savouring the prospect of the end of his term of office in just a few days. New sheriffs, both for London and the adjacent county of Middlesex, had already been elected and will be sworn in at the Guildhall by the Mayor on Michaelmas Eve. A wealthy merchant, whose aggressive tactics had netted him an enviable fortune from importing raisins, spices, olive oil, iron and wine, Spencer found his civic responsibilities irksome and looked forward eagerly to returning to trade. Wearing his violet gown and gold chain of office, he set out with his constables on what he sincerely hoped would be one final, uneventful inspection of the city streets. Such random patrols have become depressingly frequent. In the years since the bloody slaughter in Paris and a dozen other French towns of some 13,000 Huguenots, the name given to French Protestants, in the fortnight after St. Bartholomew's Day in August 1572, there have been recurrent large influxes of refugees fleeing from religious persecution to the safety of London. Immigrant communities, chiefly French and Flemish, but also German and Italian, were by now firmly entrenched, creating severe tensions with the local population, especially those in the clothing trade, as immigrant workers routinely flouted the rules laid down by the craft guilds. This made the mayor and aldermen determined to curb vagrancy, crime, and the black economy, and to keep immigrants in check. Alongside street patrols, security crackdowns have become as much a part of civic life in recent years as clearing animal dung from the streets and queuing for bread at the baker's shop. Tension and fear were everywhere. The threat level had first been raised in 1570, after Pope Pius V published a decree excommunicating Elizabeth and declaring her to be deposed on the grounds that she was a heretic, a schismatic and a tyrant, the bastard offspring of Henry VIII's unlawful second marriage. Nailed to the front door of the Bishop of London's Thameside Palace at Fulham just a few weeks after a dangerous insurrection in the north of England was brutally crushed, the decree made her a legitimate target for any Catholic assassin. Before the Pope proclaimed his decree, Catholics who refused to conform to the Queen's Protestant religious settlement had been largely left alone. Parliament had imposed fines of a shilling a week to the use of the poor on anyone refusing to attend their local parish church, but enforcement was patchy. All this changed after the papal decree, when the assumption was increasingly that Catholics were traitors if they failed to come to church, and instead harboured Catholic priests in their houses or frequented illicit masses. The Northern Rising had shown just how fragile the fledgling Protestant state really was. Carrying the cross and the banners of the five wounds of Christ, the 6,000 or so rebels had set out from Durham Cathedral and marched through North Yorkshire to Wetherby and Selby, besieging Barnard Castle in Teesdale and celebrating the Mass wherever they went. They saw themselves as defenders of the Commonwealth, claiming that they wanted to save Elizabeth from a lawless faction of Machiavellians. By this, they meant that they aimed to purge Burleigh, they called him King Cecil, and his Protestant friends from the Privy Council and Parliament. They would replace them with good Catholic noblemen loyal to the Queen. Aghast at the scale of this dissent, Elizabeth had been ruthless in her response. The revolt itself was brought under control without significant bloodshed, but the reprisals were vicious. Mistrustful of her military leaders lest they show undue mercy, she turned to someone closely bound to her by family ties. Her aunt, Mary Boleyn, had married William Carey, and it was their son, Henry, Elizabeth's first cousin. She called him My Harry, and had raised him to the peerage as Lord Hunsdon within days of her accession, whom she chose. Hunsdon sent 600 or more rebels to the gallows, leaving their bodies rotting there for terror. 60 more, mostly the younger sons of wealthy gentry families, escaped over the frontier into Scotland before fleeing abroad, mainly to Paris or Rome. There they joined 800 or so English Catholic exiles and Jesuits, who at once began to scheme and plot how best to put the Pope's decree into effect. The earliest and most threatening of these plots, the memory of which was still fresh in Sheriff Spencer's mind as he patrolled London streets in 1584, was to make the career of the man who would soon become Burghley's most driven and effective colleague in the Privy Council. Francis Walsingham, tall, thin, sallow-cheeked, with brown hair and moustache, and a lean and hungry look, like Cassius in William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, was about 40 years old, 12 years younger than Burghley. An ardent Protestant, converted, like Burghley, to the new faith as a student at Cambridge, Walsingham was appointed to be Elizabeth's resident ambassador to France in 1570. 2 years earlier, in his first letter to Burghley, he had set out his political creed, warning the chief minister of the malice of this present time, before urging that there is less danger in fearing too much than too little, and there is nothing more dangerous than security, by which, of course, he meant the lack of security.